Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Fill My Eyes and Company with Poetry. Happy Friday. TGIF for sure. Hope everyone had a great week and hope you have a better weekend to follow. Hey, Rex, what's happening, man?
Not a thing at this point.
Well, sometimes no news is good news, so I'll go for that. Oh, my goodness. What a crazy day. It's been like, I don't know. I've been tired all damn day, and it's not from, like, killing myself doing anything. Just, I guess it's just weather and the same old here. But we went up to 69 today. I can't even gripe about that. I don't know.
Yeah.
Must be
we
my
had
day.
72.
Ooh, nice. Yeah. I know when I opened the door to let the pup out, I was like, wow, this is pretty cool out here. You know, not cool as in cold, but cool as in great, you know? I went, yeah, I like it. So, yes. So let's see, what do we have going on tonight? We have poetry on the board. We don't have an overabundance of poetry on the board. Might I add, hint, anyone who's listening. But I'm always happy for a couple more pieces. And, yeah, looks like some good stuff. We got some good donations from some great poets. So that's always nice. That is always nice. So, yeah, I'm trying to think what else is happening. We got a couple surprises coming up for people in the near future, which I'm looking forward to. We have, Yes, we have. I can't tell you what they are, otherwise they won't be surprises anymore. And then that wouldn't be fun. We also have, I don't know, I feel like we have a whole lot of things going on because my brain's trying to keep up with, like, things I need to. Oh, I know what I wanted to say. Part Center, Part Insane tonight is a repeat performance. I believe it was from 1:15 of 2022 with Aphasiana and Babbler. Aphasiana is otherwise detained tonight. No, she's not in jail. But she's tied up with something and she couldn't make the show. So I tried to put that up and I believe it's going to work, but I don't know for sure because it was acting kind of funny when I did it. So I will cross my fingers and hope that the show starts at 12:30. Other than that, I can't say too much about it. But I can be hopeful, right? And tomorrow night is Gray Eyes Smith and Dan Deschino doing front page picks with the help of Lou Yu Wild Dove. And then I think we're off late tomorrow night. Yes, we are. And then Sunday is Rex. Rex. Rhythm and rhyme with Rex. We need to get another R word in there, though, because I think it had more flow that way. Can I tell you? It's me. Just being me. So anyway, that's the scoop. But I wanted to tell you about the After Midnight show tonight because, you know, it's up in the air how that's going to work. And I don't want everybody thinking that, wait, where's the show? And I go, I don't know. That's what my kids used to say when they were little. I'd say, who did that? I don't know. That's what they would tell me all the time. Stick up for one another. You know, 3 and 4 years old, 4 and 5 years old. They'd be like, oh, thick as thieves they were. Anyway, just saying. So if you hear me say, I don't know, you'll know where it came from. They taught me well. Anyhow, Rex, what do you think? Do you think we should kick this off, or you got something you want to tell us about? Is there something I'm forgetting? It is what? Oh, tomorrow's my grandson's birthday, if anybody cares. Just so I let you know.
Next week is Thanksgiving.
Yes. Absolutely. We're getting there. It's almost Thanksgiving. It's amazing. This year just went past so quickly. So darn quickly. But that's all right. You know, it works. We just keep hanging in here. You know, sometimes we're only hanging by a thread, but we're still hanging. Right, Rex? We're still hanging.
Yeah. Yes.
I think I behave myself tonight. It doesn't seem like my jokes are going over that well. Wait, let me look in the room. Is anybody laughing? No, there's nobody there to laugh. See this? Okay, enough humor for today then. Oh, my God. So, anyway, let me see now. I guess I should get kind of creative, huh?
Hey, I remember. What was that? They shut the Wi-Fi down at the farm. Do you know why?
No.
The cows were downloading too much music.
Oh, God. Wow, that was one of them dad jokes. You know that, right?
Absolutely.
Hey, why not, right? Why not? I say any joke's a good joke. If it gives you a chuckle, a smile, even if you just grin and shake your head, I still say it's a good joke, you know? Gives you something good to think about. So, Rex, you know you're going to read the first poem tonight, right?
Of course.
Yes. Very good. I'm glad you know that. The first poem tonight is by Francisco Del Mar. Yes. How you like that? And it is The Tale of Shalott. I looked high and low. I thought I had a recording of this somewhere, but I did not. So, I'm going to say whenever you're ready. Yes.
Since it shows up.
Oh, God. You know what? I didn't put it up. I just opened it. Oh, my God. It's going to be a long night like this. Here we go. Paste. There we go. Ooh, uh-huh. Northern Phoenix is calling in. Oh, I think she's here. Hang on 1 second.
Hi.
Hello, 705. Is that you, Northern
Yep,
Phoenix?
That's me.
Awesome show.
It is.
Good to have you. And you're here just in time to hear Rex read Frank's poem. Uh-huh.
Okay, great.
So here we go. Whenever you're ready, Rex.
All right. The Tale of Shalott by Francisco Del Mar. The Tenebrous clouds of the castle's gloom shall stay with the ominous dirge and loom, as the mournful winds have sung her doom by the bosom of the dim river once abloom. Along the castle of Shalott, somber are the willows and the hyacinths, languishing in the luminous labyrinths beyond the wearisome verge of the plinths, the remorse of the Lady of Shalott. Is the charming Lady of Shalott men adore, behind the queer-looking glass she forswore, and Sir Lancelot saw her beauty herefore, amidst the autumn's waft gusting ashore, the woe of Shalott. Unmistakable whims of dubiety and rue, appearing before drear spectres that imbue her desolate walls with an unbidden view, the Lady of Shalott. Wherefore hath she vanished within the river, of a daunting wall with the old thorn and sliver, where those sprightly swans shall shiver before restless boughs of trees that quiver? Oh, the dread mystery of Shalott, whence the echoes of joy shall resound in the alacrity of the daffodils profound, by an infinite verge of water lilies around, the Lady of Shalott. Hark, the gentle whispers of her voice nearby, as the seraphims sing with rejoice her reply, staring at the balcony of the tower whereby wrought shepherds of Elysian fields comply, the faithful men of Shalott. Hymns of her praise shall be heard thus oft, beyond the chamber of her condemnation aloft, as those homes of flowers shall be anew soft, the Lady of Shalott. Her shadows seen with a flutter of the wings of winsome fairies swift with their springs, beyond the gardens of lost sapphire rings, sing her paean before the cadent kings, the vicissitude of Shalott. Dawn hath now arrived with joyous glee of mirth and gaiety of a soul eagerly free, to frolic in a hammock beyond the lee, the Lady of Shalott. The dark veil of her despair and isolation, with an abeyance of her grievous damnation, to uplift her hope of an imminent salvation, with reapers' rhapsodies and jovial elation, the hymns of praise anon of Shalott. August knights of Camelot, men of modesty, shall all bow in obeisance before her majesty, till they have swooned by her immortal vanity, the Lady of Shalott. A malediction shall be gone in placid euphony of dowdy knights of phantoms of eulogy, who drown with tristful words of her monody, in devotion of a virginal gleam, ridding her agony. Avaunt the curse of the Lady Shalott. Pallid is the silhouette of her glum sorrow, with the breathtaking wish of a fresh morrow, and gone shall be a vestige of her furrow, the Lady of Shalott. Behold the basilic castle of Shalott a standing tall, of him by the hill at the top of the aisle seen by the wall, with splendor of her image beyond the hall, to revive the emerald green of a bitter gall, tis the tale of Shalott. Feel the daring spirit of the Lady of Shalott anew, from yonder bracing wind of Camelot it blew, unto the wistful fall of a haunting dripping dew, the Lady of Shalott. And poem. All right, Jane.
That was a great read, Rex. Yeah, I love this piece by Frank. It's just as great as it was the first time I heard it. So it was really well done. I love the rhyme and meter of it, and I thought the story was just well handled all the way through. Each stanza was I don't want to use the words well done again, but I thought they were great because I loved the rhyme scheme in them. You know, the first half was done in one end rhyme, and then the second half was done in another. And I think that the lines about Shalott just broke it up beautifully. So great piece, Frank, and thanks for bringing it out for us to read again. I liked it very much.
Nice. Thank you, Jean. And Northern, what about you?
Well, I liked the rhyming scheme as well. I thought that was kind of neat. I liked how it reminded me of something you would see maybe in a movie about, like, something like Lord of the Rings or something. It kind of reminded me of the fields in New Zealand and, like, having a lady in the woods, just kind of being there in a long flowing dress. And so it made me think of that. Yeah, I like the sort of ethereal quality to it.
Nice. Thank you very much. Yeah, it did have a nice... There's an almost... you can hit this up with the idea of what you find out of the minstrel going back 1,000 years. Something that keeps the crowd in with the tale that's being told of this Lady of Shalott and all that that befalls her, or comes her way, and that kind of tale that elicits emotion from the audience itself enough to, all right, the minstrel did well. I'll throw him a few pennies here and there so we can have some more. I like that type of story. And it does roll, especially with the fact that he went with double mono rhyme for each stanza, you know, from the ooms to the ints to the fours and the yous to the ivers and the ounds rolling through the each stanza holding its own rhyme scheme all by itself. So nicely done, Frank.
Okie dokie.
Well, yeah, back on you.
All right. Northern, I'm going to ask you to read this next piece by Jenny the Deep. It's called Exiting the Womb to Danger. And whenever you're ready.
Yeah. Open it up.
Ooh.
Okay. Exiting the Womb to Danger. In my mother's womb, I was content with warmth. Then I was deemed a girl as doctors swarmed, grabbing me quickly before I could slip, with a doctor's hands well equipped. In the terrain, all eyes on me, making sure I can breathe. A suffocating umbilical cord puts my life in danger. My fate is now in the hands of a stranger. Miraculously, my eyes open to reds and blues, and my ears hear the good news. All will be all right. Your baby girl will overcome this plight. We just need to observe her overnight. Missing my warm womb as I sit in an empty cold room, finally, a woman called Mom hears my sobbing sighs. Taking my hand, she soothes my lonely cries. End poem.
Great read, Norman. Thank you very much. I am going to start with you again, Jean.
Imagine that. No, this. I thought this was a neat piece. I was kind of amazed by Jenny's take on the prompt, the image prompt.
Yeah.
But when you look at it, I can see where she's coming from. I really could. And I was like, I could roll with that. In a terrain, sure I can breathe. A suffocating umbilical cord puts my life in danger. My fate is now in the hands of a stranger. Kind of interesting. Because she says in her author's notes, you know, what I see is a baby in the womb in danger outside it. And when you look, I was kind of like looking for the danger, but somehow this, my mind, but it looks like a wolf down in the corner of this picture somehow. And I looked again and I went, oh, wow. But so I can totally get where she's coming from. And I think she did a nice job with the piece. This story was well told and she really made it clear, you know, like she had me look at that image a whole different way. So well done. And thank you, Jenny, for sharing with us.
Thank you, Jean. And Northern, you got to read. How about you?
I like the image of a baby in the womb being all warm and comfortable and coming out and facing the world and having it be a little bit of a dangerous place. I think that's a bit of real life. You come into the world an innocent creature and you're faced with the obstacles that you have to overcome pretty much right away. So I like that. I liked the flow of the poem. It was gentle. It wasn't. It didn't bash you over the head with its structure. It was a nice flowing poem that made you feel comfortable. So reading it like you were in the womb.
Absolutely. Thank you very much. It does start out with that nice opening, the warmth of mother's womb right there at the top, and then the difficulty as you put it right there in the second stanza. And the turnabout being, this one work out just fine. Sometimes they don't. Been on the end of this one, so I understand how it works. And it's not always a good thing, but it's a happy one when it works just fine. And the back end also hits on that idea of what we get born into, that nice cozy little labyrinth for 9 months into a world which is full of light and all other manner of dispositions, and it's cold, not nearly as warm and pliable as the home you had for 9 months. So there's that other note to the second tribulation. Ooh, now I got to keep warm because it's a bit light out here.
Yep. Okay. Well, the next piece I'm going to put up is one of our carryovers from Wednesday 2 weeks ago. So we're having a little note of Frisky Friday here. So here we go. It's called Dessert Most Divine by Robert M. And I do have an audio for this. So,
this is my recital of Dessert Most Divine. I can hardly wait to indulge in such rich sweetness. Fingers sample your curvature, dipping into your warm delight. Slightly nipping at the poised cherry that is such a treat to the eyes, but more so to the tongue. Things are going to turn out so very messy at this rate. Your syrupy goodness is making its way along my hands and chin. Damn, I can no longer refrain. I put you inside of my eager mouth. Voraciously I devour you, and my lips know of heaven when I plunge tongue deep into your creamy center.
Great read, Robert. Thank you for the sound, pal. It is very much appreciated. And Northern, why don't we start with you, please?
Well, let's see. Okay. First of all, my. I like the metaphor of the candy and the woman, and I liked how he didn't shy away from just going for it. And, it's a very warm poem, I would say, a little steamy. And I liked how I'll never look at, what do they call those, the candy with the cherry in the middle and the chocolate the same way anymore, those that come out at Christmas time. So, yeah.
Yes.
Nice. Thank you, Norris. All right, Jean.
I have to giggle. Oh, my gosh. Yes, I remember when this was new. Great job, Robert. That's what I said to him. That was one hell of a cupcake, and I said great audio, too. So, it really was. It was just a well-done piece, a nice play on the prompts, I'm sure, because I don't remember what the prompts were, but I'm sure that it suited it, because I'm sure this was done for The Art of Seduction. For Sizzling with Sensuality, as I'm sure when it was written for. But it was a wonderful job, and boy, oh boy, what an audio. great piece. So thanks for sharing.
Nice. Hey, anytime you can turn food into a sensual treat, well, you hit the mark, not to mention the humor that rolls in with it when you realize, oh, it's a cupcake. Yeah,
yep.
Dirty mind.
Exactly.
Where are you going?
What did you think I was talking about? Right, exactly. Oh, my God. Too funny. Selena says it was a hatcha trap piece. See? Oh, my God.
See, now when you go to the store, you won't look at a Hostess cupcake the same way anymore.
Nope. I don't think any of us will. Anyone listening tonight will have a new perspective.
or one of those nice lava cakes. Mm. You cut into that and all that chocolate oozes out.
Oh, my. I'm not sure if it's the same contest, because I had written one about a candy bar. And I don't know if maybe it was the same contest and we all had to pick, whatever. But, it was a lot of fun. All good stuff. Okay, the next piece I'm going to put up is called Floating Music Beneath the Moonlight by Pam Wright. and I'm going to give it a read. So you know I'm nervous. So here we go. Okay, Floating Music Beneath the Moonlight by Pam Ray. Shadows caressing the curve of the silver orb, tender music floats. The ocean breeze plays tendrils of flame, wild and free. Love from within shines. With every moan, he consumes her aching thoughts. Her skin needs his touch. He has gone away. Adventure in his mistress. Adventure is his mistress. She hangs on to hope. The soaring ravens carry her message of love, lusting eternal. Though time may change him, she will know his spirit's light upon shores of sand. Her bow is gliding, teasing a shiver from taut strings, wooing notes to bring him home, sharing a dream's kiss, drenched eruption of salt spray, where moonlight threads bind. End poem. Woo-hoo.
I see. Thank you, Jean. And Northern, what do you think?
Oh, I like this one. It's very wanderlust. It's got a lot of wanderlust in it and longing for the other person. And there's still a sense of hope there where maybe she can get him back. And she's trying with her bow to send him a love message. So it's a little bit uplifting, but at the same time, very longing.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Thank you, Norman. All right, Jean, you got to read it. What about you?
You know, I really like this piece. I liked each one of these stanzas, you know, because each one had its own note. It felt, I don't want to say it that way. It just prompted a feeling from you. And each one was just a little bit different and just enough to keep that want and that need and that lust and whatever else you want to word it, alive throughout the whole poem. You know, I love the lines, he has gone away. Adventure is his mistress. She hangs on to hope. But the next three stanzas after that, I really liked a lot as well. So, you know, there's not really one I didn't like. But I think that Pam did an excellent job with this. Just beautifully written and a lovely piece. So, great job. Thanks for sharing, Pam.
Yeah, that's a gorgeous picture. And she went a little different. Dips into Betty Page territory with 575 angles on the lines.
Yeah.
For each of those stanzas. So that's a different motif for Pam to play with. So
right.
Where the hell was that? Okay, when she wrote this one. wasn't in the woods tearing up the bear traps.
Well, it was a front page pick 5 hours ago, it says. So excellent. And congratulations on that, Pam. But yeah, I really like how she brought the image.
That picture is gorgeous, too.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, she really, I think she hit almost everything in it. You know, I mean, without, you know, sitting there and saying, and she was playing her bow. You know, she really did a great job with it. You know, she brought in the ravens the ravens, you know, carry her message of love, lusting eternal, you know, and I thought that was great because you almost don't even notice them on that right-hand side if you just scroll on quick, you know, running through it. But great job. I'm with you, Rex. Good piece. I didn't have to get scared either. How do you like that? See?
Fun.
Yeah, it's pretty good. A little devil didn't come. Dun, 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 dun. Dun, dun, dun. Okay, now where am I going?
We're going with boom, like a, like a, like a, boom, like a, like a, like
a. Oh, my God. I'm coming back to you, Rex. I have a piece here by Cedar Chapman. Cedar Chapman is called We've Drunk Blood, whenever you're ready.
We've Drunk Blood by Cedar Chapman. We've drunk blood, ate flesh, stacked coffins to touch the clouds, demolished enough brick and mortar to carve 10 tombstones for every casket. Even God cannot create enough trees for all the child-sized wooden boxes, nor build enough graves to line our streets. Linen-wrapped gyros oozing rigor mortis as if a translucent cloth hides humanity's shame. Beaven, engineer, Maya, doctor, Aya, nurse, beloved mothers and daughters, swallowed in a cloud of dust and smoke while eating lunch, or drinking tea, or reading a bedtime story. Lift me over this 20-foot wall behind where all the preachers hide. Let us both weep until our eyes are bone dry. Then we'll weep some more, sip from our father's vineyards while the sun scorches blackened soil, hand holding hand, muscles in our faces, waiting, just waiting for the moon's lullaby. And boom. All right, Gene.
Great. Geez, I wish I had seen this video now, because he said he was moved to tears when he watched this video. It says that it is a source of my inspiration for this poem, and it highlights the spirit of human forgiveness, shows the true meaning of faith, and in my opinion is the only path forward to peace. Oh, now I wish I had seen it. Gosh, dang it. But what a wonderful piece by Cedar. And I sound like a broken record when I say that all the time, because it's he writes so well. What is this now? The second says, even God cannot create enough trees for all the child-sized wooden boxes, nor build enough graves to line our streets. Linen-wrapped gyros oozing rigor mortis, as if a translucent cloth could hide humanity's shame. You know, first off, that's like almost gut-wrenching. That's the best way to put that. Beloved mothers and daughters swallowed in a cloud of dust and smoke while eating lunch or drinking tea or reading a bedtime story. Wow. Yeah. It's had a lot of pain in it, but it's so beautifully presented to capture people's attention and have them not just run away and say, I can't do it. I can't read it. I can't read it. You know, he made it where it can be read. And yeah, it's awful, but it's not the kind of write that's going to make you go and say, oh no, I can't do it. It's too sad, too whatever. I think it was just really well done and really well put out there for all of us. And he's pretty wonderful. But that ending line, actually the last two lines, waiting, just waiting for the moon's lullaby. Wow. You know, oh, I don't know, but this is a wonderful piece. And Cedar Chapman, thank you so much for sharing with us. Just incredible. And I'm going to watch that video afterwards too. So thank you for attaching that.
Wonderful said, Gene. Thank you very much. And Northern, how about you?
It's very moving. It was very fitting for the time. It definitely makes you think. And sometimes we need poems that make us think and make us feel something like this, because it's important. And there's a lot of stuff going on right now, and it's important to be confronted with it and to experience it in a way that will make you feel either sympathy or rage or something that can maybe make you participate in something that might help somebody else somewhere. So, yeah, it's important to be motivated to care about other people and what they're going through. So it is important to speak about these things that we're confronted with on the news and give it a voice and give it a bit of humanity, because that's sorely lacking right now.
Excellent. Well done, you two. Well, back to time. I have to hit on what I see in this, the idea. I like the metaphors he's drawn on. Demolishing up brick and mortar to carve 10 tombstones for every casket. A nice note there, as well as that line, linen wrapped heroes oozing rigor mortis as if a translucent cloth could hide humanity's shame. There's a stark note of reality in those lines right there, the heroes oozing rigor mortis. It's dark, yet it's not too dark, yet it shows exactly what he needs to show in the moment. It's perfect line, without being overly graphic, which is wonderful.
Yep.
And he does keep that tone and then hits into the idea of those lost with the Bisan Maya and Aiea. And then that sort in the last one, let us both weep until our eyes are bone dry. Then we'll weep some more, sit in my father's vineyards while the sun scorches blackened soil, hand holding hand, muzzles in our faces, waiting. Just waiting for the moon's lullaby. The moon representing that note of peace and a heavenly greeting, I guess. So, well done, Cedar. Thank you.
Yeah, pretty amazing. Pretty amazing. He definitely did a fabulous job. Okay, let me do that and do.
Hello, Naomi.
Oh, Naomi. Okay, there we go. Let me check the board. Oh, she didn't call us, though, that Naomi girl. I'm waiting.
Maybe she just arrived.
Maybe.
She's sneaking in the back door and just listening.
That's right. Peeking in to see what's going on over here.
Hello, Naomi.
And the next quiz I'm going to put up is by Darkened Auras. And, Norton, I'm going to ask you to read this for us. This one's called Turnabout Play Working. Working title? Well, maybe I better hit the button first. Yes, Turnabout Play, Working title. Whenever you're ready, hon.
Okay. Turnabout Play, Working title. She whisks across the dim-lit walls, a spirit in the night. No one knows the truth, which is she lost her life tonight. Her screams still echo through the room. Her nails have scraped the floor. She must relive each new day, just as the one before. A woman ran inside the house, searching for a place to hide. She just could not erase her past, no matter how she tried. Her boyfriend followed her inside, taunting, "You can't run," followed by the dreadful phrase, "You'll die once I'm done." She ran into a bedroom, tripped and hit her head. Nails scrapped across the floor as he drug her to the bed. He carved her skin like artwork as she felt the screams of pain. The way that he enjoyed it, you'd think he was insane. But that spirit's just an ego trapped in feeling left behind. That frightened woman screaming was just a figment in his mind. Cops found him in the morning, barely still alive, repeating in a whisper, "How could she survive?" He saw her standing by the wall. As all around began to fade, with a demonic laugh, she replied, "You can't kill what you made." End poem.
Great read, Norton. Thank you very much. All right, Gene, what do you think?
It's a fabulous piece. You know, I was kind of like listening to this story going, oh, my God, oh, my God. And I think that she did a fine job of presenting the whole kit and caboodle in this story, because the imagery was great, and it was so it seemed so real, like, you know, it's happening right here, you know. And then you get down to, but the spirit's just, he carved her skin like artwork as she belted screams of pain. The way that he enjoyed it, you'd think he was insane. But that spirit's just an ego trapped in feeling left behind. That frightened woman screaming was just a figment in his mind. Like, okay, okay. And then, you know, the next two stanzas just confirm it, that, you know, it was just something, you know, that he created. It was his imagination. And I think it was just really well written. So nice job, Darkened Auras, and thank you so much for sharing with us. Yes, yes.
Bye. Thank you, Gene. And Northern, you got to read it. How about you?
At the beginning, I'm thinking, where is this going? Yeah. Where are we going on this trip? And I like the twist at the end where she became just a figment of his imagination. I thought that was clever. Carving her skin like artwork as she belted screams of pain, that kind of stood out to me. I'm thinking, is he like Jack the Ripper? What's he doing? And then, so it was a little bit of a relief to know that it was just a figment of his imagination, that he didn't capture some poor, helpless victim and was carving her up. But the poet does warn you that she will write stark poems, so at least you have a bit of a forewarning of what you're in for. But, yeah.
Hi. Thank you, Norton. Yeah, right up front, I can hit that song, Spirit in the Night, with the second line. And then I, too, was rolling in that note of Jack the Ripper, because it did walk that role. But she got down to the back end. Okay. Yeah. Turnabout's fair play. Madness on the edge of someone's mind in the corner, thinking he'd done a deed. But it's all a creation of the man that's within his own head. That's a nice little bit of twisted thought playing with, and it rolls with a, it's got an easy flow to it too, so it reads really well.
Mm-hmm.
Nicely done, Christina.
Absolutely. Well, I think Naomi's with us.
That thing was 12 years old.
Wow, that's pretty good. Pretty darn good. Hey, Naomi, is that you?
Yeah, it's me.
Hi.
Hello, hello, hello.
Hello, Rex. Hi, Northern Phoenix.
Hello.
Doing good. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Friday night. Dude, my daughter's coming tomorrow. Big visit.
Oh, yeah.
I'm really happy. Oh, yeah, she's coming with my granddaughter, so be fun, fun, fun. She's coming
tell
for the weekend.
To be by the way. I got that next week. I'm going to have a house full of people and extra dogs.
Oh, God. That's funny. Well, that'll keep you busy for a while.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I need her visit. Oh, yeah. Been a while since I didn't see any of my children, so yeah, that'll be fun.
Absolutely. Okay,
yeah.
I'll tell you what. I'm gonna
Aha, she's getting to put to work. Welcome, Naomi.
No, I wasn't. The next one I have to ask, and it has an audio. Ha ha. Ha ha. You got it?
That's all right. Get the next one.
Maybe. You never know. Okay, this is called The Silence, and that's by Stelina. And my understanding is the recording was made by Robert M. So let me hit that button.
This is my recital of The Silence, a poem by the poetess Stelina. A silence lives there, which hangs in the air. A cloak of despair made for each soldier to wear. A soul in sighs, unspoken words and weary eyes, and wasted youth dies for long forgotten lies. They stagnate in cloying mud, ingrained with veins of brotherly blood. This silent midst the shells and frenzied yells, tolling death knells and private hells, dwells far away from the battles of phrase and memories of halcyon summer days, where lovers' lips sweet words impart and home fires burn inside the heart. Carnage all around, they hear no sound as heartbeats pound and bodies bound in chains of fear on hell's frontier. Death lurking near, haunting fields so drear. The night turns bleak and bitter with cold. They stand resolute, so staunch and bold. Yet deep inside they weep in lamentation, islands in a sea of desolation, observing in disbelief the annihilation of the Almighty's consummate creation. And ask themselves one question, why? Why is this the place we have to die? Not comforted in a beloved's embrace, before our Maker we must face, to answer for proxied sinful deeds, instead of tending to humanity's needs.
Great read, Robert, and thank you for the SoundCloud, Stelina. Naomi, let's start with you.
Yeah, what a great write. Looking at the date, for Remembrance Day. What an amazing, heartfelt write this is. She has so much wonderful emotion in this, heart. Pulls at your heartstrings, really. And, just the part with, the longing for for a loved one. You know, where she says, in memories of thousand day, summer days, where lovers' lips sweet words impart and home fires burn inside the heart. You know, they're there in the middle of the battle, but, you know, back home, there's their family, there's their, you know, their loved ones there, you know, waiting, hoping, and that they carry with them too, you know, in their, along with them, probably thinking of them, certainly thinking of them in the midst of all this horror that's going on. And, so she really, you know, really, really captivated the all that they go through. And even when they come back home, you know, the haunting feeling that the PTSD that they feel there. And, really, really well done, Stelena. Wow. You know, amazing, right?
Nice. Thank you, Naomi. And Northern, how about you?
And ask themselves one question, why? Why is this the place we have to die? Not comforted in the beloved's embrace before our maker we must face, to answer for proxies, sinful deeds instead of tending to humanity's needs. That just moves me. It's very powerful. And it makes you think a lot again about today and what's happening in the world and what people are facing. It touches on very powerful subject matter that we need to be confronted with sometimes and to put ourselves in the shoes of the people that are doing the fighting. And try to understand their plight and what they're going through and what they're sacrificing. Definitely appropriate for Remembrance Day. Very moving.
Excellent. Thank you very much. And Jean, how about you? After you unmute yourself.
You're doing an awful lot from me, you know. Just want to tell you, you know. God. I charge extra for the unmuting part. Anyway. Wow. I'm not going to go there. My mind back out of that thought. What an incredible piece by Stelena. Amazing imagery and emotions were so well expressed in this. It was very well done. And there were so many well-penned stanzas in this. There's only four, and every one of them was great. It's another one that is copy them all and paste them all. But I didn't do it. I actually grabbed up the last stanza, the same one Northern quoted. But I wanted to grab the second one. The silence mid the shells and frenzied yells, tolling death knells in private health, lives far away from the battles that phrase in memories of halcyon summer days, where lovers' lips sweet words impart and home fires burn inside the heart. It kind of, that there started off that thought process of wanting to be home, wanting to be with loved ones, you know, instead of in the carnage and the horrendous circumstance. And I think that it just was really, really nicely done. Again, you know, as always, always with Stelena's right, you know, her great use of alliteration throughout. It's not real heavy, but it definitely helps those words to just flow across your ear so beautifully. Great piece. And thank you for sharing, Stelena. You did a wonderful job with this. Absolutely.
Absolutely. I got to go with the first three stanzas using both inline and end rhyme to intensify the feelings offered up. The despair, the sigh, the lie, the stagnant cloying mud, and the brotherly blood being spilled. And then the offer up, then you go to sound, shells and yells, death knells, private hells. Everything being intensified a bit with the layout for the rhyme scheme, the first three stanzas. Then she turned out and stalked up with the last one because she wanted to hit on the implication of what it means to be them and why they should be honored. And that's a perfect way to finish. Nicely done, Stelena.
Oh, I guess I'm supposed to do something.
We're back on you.
Yeah, I'm supposed to do something. Silly me. Silly me, silly me. okay. Here's what I'm going to do next. Naomi, I'm going to get you to read this next piece. But you notice it. But you notice Rick grabbed you first. He got you first. He did. You just remember that. And see, the yoke's on you. Okay, Naomi, Riding Beside You by Naomi Sarah.
Okay, then. This is just a fun little piece I wrote. Okay, just came to me in the spot and, you know, just in the moment. Riding beside you, I roll down the window, stick out my feet, and snuggle back into the passenger seat as All the Ways I Love You kind of songs play on the radio. And you laugh and say, watch out, a bird might just poop on a foot. And I laugh back answering, well, he'd have to be quite nimble now, wouldn't he? And you smile, lean over, nibble my ear, whispering, as nimble as I had to be to catch you, my gypsy queen. And I look into your blue eyes and answer, I'm happy you did. As our favorite song comes on and we sing along together, the wind whistling through my toes. End poem.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, so you, since you played that little game, you get start. Aha.
Well. I think this is sweet, Naomi. I really do. I thought it was a sweet little piece, very well written, a lot of playfulness, and the imagery was good, you know what I mean? And it gives you a good chuckle and a smile. You know, what more could we ask for some days? You know, let me see here. Where did it go? Let's see. I'm trying to find a space that I can pick up one because it's a block, you know, and it all runs like together. It weaves in together. So, but as nimble as I had to be to catch you, my gypsy queen, and I look into your blue eyes and answer, I'm happy you did. As our favorite song comes on and we sing along together, the wind whistling through my toes, you know? Yeah, you know, it was just really sweet and it was fun. Yes, nice job. Nice job, Naomi. It's a feel-good piece. I like it.
Thank you. It's something I do, you know? I do often, put my feet out the window. On the car. My style.
What?
Okay. Northern, how about you?
I liked the whimsical quality to the poem. It is a fun poem. It's very sweet. I love music, so the idea of kicking up your feet and listening to some love songs and talking to your lover like that, yeah, I can get with that. And, yeah, it's definitely got great imagery. I can picture myself in the car doing what you say you do and putting up my feet and enjoying the scenery. And, yeah, I like it.
Thank you.
Thank you, Noah. Well, the first thing I thought of was, since you're up there, I guess we got to play it off with a Canadian band. So I thought of Rolling Down the Highway by BTO, which is feet hanging out the window and rocking out. So I think it was a nice touch. You hit on that note of the feet as a humor motif, like taking your dog for a ride, and you've got the dog's ears flapping out the window, the muzzle snooting up and grabbing all that air. So I like it. It's funny. Offers up it does hit to something tender and warm, but it also offers up a note of humor as well.
Thank you, Rick.
You're welcome.
Yeah.
All right, Jane, we're back on you.
See, you thought you'd get me twice, see? No.
You ain't seen nothing yet.
Too funny. Okay, now let me hit my add comment button. Otherwise, it'll be in vain in my part. And let me see. Rex, I think it's your turn again. I could be wrong.
Okay.
it might be my turn, but I don't know. So in that case, it makes it your turn.
Okay. Always, eh? I do that too.
I get lost, Wedge. I get lost. Okay, right. This one's called Surfing the Rocky Shores by Daniel Descino. And whenever you're ready.
Surfing the Rocky Shores by Daniel Descino. History is a barstool conversation to be swallowed with the next glass of wine and lost in the cheers the local team's television victory. There is no better historian than the commoner and I, a common commoner sitting on the commons of a mainstream town, smile at what was and cry at what is. It's not the progress, but the progression I've seen through the years. Harmony builds and builds, but one broken string and an orchestra is in disarray. Power is power, and hatred in power releases the power of hatred. I can feel it in the air. There is no calm. There is just tension. Governments at war within, each branch reduced to a brittle weathered twig, breaking from the heavy load, and at the top sit the vultures, waiting to see who falls. History, wax and wane, illuminate and darkness, illuminate and darkness. The hope that each night becomes a little less scary and the daytime a little less overwhelming, if we can only survive the night. And in these times, changed, chilled, filled with deceit and deception, the historians, which is everyone, need to ask a simple question, selfless question, with a general thought for the world in their thoughts. When did the darkness start? Oh, the commonest of the commoners, contemplating on the commons, in the commonest of towns, pondering the past and fearing the future, not much I can do but wait and hope. Hope for the dissonance to harmonize once again. Hope for survival, the only true right. Hope for humanity to be more human once more. The times are changing. Let's hope they change again. And boom. All right, Naomi, let's start with you, please.
Yeah, I had this song in my head the whole time, A Change Will Come. I don't know if you know that song. I didn't think that it would with this poem, and it's true, we're when did this darkness start? Did it start at 9/11? I don't know, but it seems that we're just headed downhill. Oh my gracious, everything is just going wrong in the world. These countries that are fighting, the wars that are going on, the climate change, the pollution. Oh, you guys, the United States, my gracious, you guys are sorry, but you guys are just a mess. your politicians fighting with one another, like you're dragging one, he's going to court and he's running for president at the same time. Oh my gracious, like in what kind of world do we see that, but here in Canada too, there's big changes. I mean, the cities are becoming more violent. We have how do we say that in English? We have they gun drive throughs, the shooting drive throughs.
Oh, yeah.
In the cities. Yeah, shooting drive bys in the city now in Montreal, more and more, and we hear about it. Parts of Montreal, especially the northern part. Oh my gracious, anyway. And, this is a very, very thought-provoking, right? I like where he says, when did the darkness start? Oh, the commonest of the commoners contemplating on the commons, in the commonest of towns, pondering the past and fearing the future. Not much I can do but wait and hope for the dissonance to harmonize once again. Hope for survival, the only true sight. Hope for humanity to be more human once more. The times are changing. Let's hope they change again. Yeah, let's hope you know, oh my gracious. Very, very thought-provoking, deep and powerful, right, by Daniel DeShino. Bravo.
Nice. Thank you, Naomi. And Northern, how about you?
Yeah, I agree with what Naya said. It's very thought-provoking. It's very, again, it touches on very important subject matter that's going on today. And I agree, the world is seemingly going downhill in many ways. And it's also getting more and more violent here in Ontario as well. And I like the stanza that says, the government's at war within, each branch reduced through a brittle weather twig, breaking from the heavy load, and at the top sits the vulture waiting to see who falls. It reminds me, there's this image that won a Pulitzer Prize from Kevin Carter, the famous photographer. He took a picture of a Sudanese girl who was starving to death, and then the vulture was stalking her. And he took the photo, and it won the prize, and then he killed himself. It harkens that image to my mind, which plays well in with the theme of the poem. And I do also agree with what the poet is writing about. I think that he hits it the nail right on the head with this one. So, yeah.
All right. Thank you, Northern. Jean, how about you? Unmuting?
Something like that. Yeah, that's where I was going. I was heading for that button that whole time. I think that this was a fabulous piece by Dan. I think he did a fabulous job and a great capture of the times, really, with all the things that are going on and the way we all have to, well, I shouldn't say we all, because I always feel like I'm excluded from all that craziness, even though I'm not. You know, I don't ever want to even put myself on that level, because that's unbelievable that how people survive. And, you know, it's amazing to me. But I kind of took this from the top line-wise. I kind of looked down where Naomi was reading, and I went, oh, yeah, male. And then I went back up to the top. And then Naomi quoted, I went, yes, good thing I backed up. I loved how you started this out. History is a barstool conversation to be swallowed with the next glass of wine and lost in the cheers to local team's television victory. There is no better historian than the commoner, and I, a common commoner, sitting on the commons of a Main Street town, smile at what was and cry at what is. It's not the progress, but the progression. I have seen through the years harmony builds and builds, but one broken string. And an orchestra is in disarray. Power is power, and hatred of power, hatred in power, releases the power of hatred. So I think that it was just really well written. I kind of liked the way he played with the words and captured something. He made it sound intriguing, I guess is a good way to put it, because the way he wrote it, his use of words. But an excellent job and very well done, Dan. And thanks for sharing with us.
I like this too. I like the angle with the commoner, or the common commoner, sitting on the commons, the commons of common commoners, with a nice note too. But answer the question, November 22nd, 1963, that's when the darkness started. Everything's been going upgraded exponentially since that date, and it's now coming to a head, because they can't hide the shit no more, because this wonderful thing called the internet allows a whole lot of stuff to be put out that would normally get swept under the rug by the mainstream mutants. Now they can't hide it anymore. So, nicely done, Daniel. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Back to you, Jean.
Yes. Yes, that's it. Why, Rex, I'm coming back to you again.
It was a long one.
I know. Hey, you know, I was tired tonight. I was going to have Eugene fill in for me, but I didn't know if you could handle it. So I opted out. So just remember that. I saved you a whole night with Eugene. You know, he's never where he's supposed to be. I mean, I'm on mute enough.
The kids aren't here yet, so I don't have any gummies.
Yeah, see, you need a lot of gummies to talk to you, Jean, let me tell you. Okay, I think I put the piece up, didn't I? Yes. Yes, I did. It's called Again by Jessica C. Wheeler. So, here I go. Oh, and I'm going to read this. Again by Jessica C. Wheeler. A ripple in the river slips away unnoticed. With time and all its trials, how can it fly yet drag? You come to me in springtime and smell like winter snow. We have not met, but I know your walk too well. Your velvet voice is deep, rich, resounding rhythm through freshly heard. Though freshly heard, I still remember the sound. You have me so completely as the ocean has a river. Each crash and I keep coming, I move to get to you. Intrinsic as the river's route, I know the way to go, to watch you waiting, open arms. End my run again. End poem.
Great read, Jean. Thank you very much. And Northern, why don't we start with you, please?
I like the flow of the poem. I'm not sure if I was able to quite understand it all. Let me read it quickly here. I like the imagery of the river. I like how there's ripples in the river and how it's like ripples in time and how he's envisioning that. I like just the flow of it like a river. Yeah, I don't know what else to say about this one. I didn't really get into it the same way as the others.
Excellent. Thank you, Northern. Naomi, how about you?
Well, I get the impression, you know, I agree with Northern Phoenix, you know, the ripple of the river is a great metaphor for the ripple of time that's passing. But I get the impression that this is somebody maybe that they met online. I don't know. Or, you know, well, if you take the modern times, if you, it would have been many, many years ago, probably would have been through letters, but now with internet, probably would be with chatting. So online, because she says, we haven't met yet, but I know your walk. So, you know, you can get to know someone very well just by chatting with them for months and, you know, without seeing them. But now she's running towards him, and she's running, you know, to into his open arms. And, you know, he's there waiting for her. And so that's what I got from the poem, you know, that she's talking about this connection that she has and this person, this loved one that she's going to meet. And, and you know, it could be even an extended metaphor for just, you know, that person that you're able to run to when times are hard and lean against and be in their arms and feel safe. So, you know, however you're looking at it, you know, you can interpret it in different ways. And that's what's great about Jessica C. Wheeler's writing every time, you know, and she's an amazing writer. So just love this.
Absolutely. Nice. I like that. Thank you, Naomi. And how about you?
Well, I got lucky because I got called on last. See, when I read the poem, I was like, okay, you know, and I can kind of agree with both of you, the ripple in time, the ripple in the river, because, you know, it talks about the ripple in the river, and then it says, how can it fly yet drag? You know, time always flies, but yet it drags, especially if you're waiting for something. But when I went down to the bottom, this was write a poem for the contest Discovering Poet series. So the poet was Rabindranath Tagore. And there was a prompt to this. There was a poem by Tagore that was used as a prompt for the poem. And I think that Jessica did a wonderful job referencing the poem and pulling the parts of it out and making it her own. But I think it carries the thoughts of Tagore. And I'm not familiar with that poet, so don't get me wrong. I just kind of skimmed through the poem. That was the prompt, and felt that it was just nicely done. A lot of great, I love the line here. I know I start something, I stop, and I start, and I stop. But I love these lines. You come to me in springtime and smell like winter snow. We have not met, but I know your walk too well. I kind of love that. You know, you come to me in springtime, and it's so new that it reminds her of winter, which was just prior. You know, it's like, I don't know how to explain that, but it's a wonderful kind of a timeline reference of sorts. Not timeline as in date or year, whatever. It's I don't know. It's just that transitional time from something so new to something new. You know, does it make sense? No, but it's close enough for my book. I get it. I really think this is just wonderful. So thank you, Jessica C. Wheeler, for sharing with us. Wonderful job with this. And congratulations on your bronze. Great piece.
Nice. Thank you. I see where this falls, where Naomi hit on it. But I look at it because of those lines you just read, I look at it as being a snowbound. You don't get to go out and walk. And it does hit on that note of walking. Know your walk too well. That note, that idea of being able to get outside and breathe fresh air without bundling up like a polar bear because it's cold. So the idea of spring rolling around, you know what's coming. Your velvet voice is deep, rich, resounding rhythm through fresh, though freshly heard. I still remember the sound. That rolls right back to the last stanza of winter rolling into a spring. You have me so completely as the ocean has a river. Each crash and I keep coming, I move to get to you. The idea of spring is here. All of a sudden, there is that new offering. It's a rebirth, whether it's because of a heavy northerly climb that you get stuck inside. It's just that note of being able to go back out and enjoy life on the outside instead of being pent up. And the idea of to watch you waiting open arms kind of hints at the idea of flowers. You get to see the daffodils first in spring, and then everything starts blooming, and then summer rolls in. So you know what you've got coming up. 7 months of just gorgeousness. And I think that's what this rolls in, that note of time being kept inside, yet all of a sudden, oh, it's back. And it's welcome. It welcomes you with open arms. So I'm going to go with that one. Yeah, but I do like the love idea.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what would you like to go next?
I don't know. Okay. We did Dan, we did that. I read Jessica, so the next one. Oh, got it. I kind of found myself again where I was going. Really? Hang on. I don't know what I just did, but I done did it. I'm on a page I've never been on before. That's what I was saying. Like, whoa, wait a minute. Northern, I have the next piece for you to read, if you don't mind. And this is, well, if I find the room now, here we go. This is by Teresa Streshenkov, and it's called Distant Suns. So whenever you are ready.
Okay. Let me open it here. Okay. Distant suns, lightly flush and get burning so hotly, distant suns in a meaningless void. No weight of stillness could hold the memory on all its vividness. Ragged black shapes of evergreen and eucalyptus, a silvery promise beyond the bowel of urban woods. The faint tree, filtered glimmer of moonlight on the window glass. Anger so intense, its grapes never raw. Reflections of cold, uncaring stars, blackest depths of the night. End poem.
Great read, Norton. Thank you very much. All right, Jean, we're going to start with you.
It's an intriguing piece. Distant suns, a meaningless void. No weight of stillness could hold the memory of all its vividness. Ragged black shapes. You know, the further the sun, the darker everything is around you. So, it just, it doesn't, there's There's nothing's bright. Nothing is bright at all. A silvery promise beyond the bough urban woods. I don't know. You know, faint tree, filtered glimmer of moonlight on the window glass. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess the distant sun is an expression for hope. I could be wrong. Everything's so wrong or so dark, and you're just waiting for that sun to rise. And I guess maybe not be so distant, but I'm not real sure. I'm not. I don't even want to lie. You know, it's got me a little bit baffled. You know, I mean, it's okay. It's a nicely done piece. I just don't quite follow the whole thought. And that could be me. That's not unusual. So, Thanks, Jean, nice. For being with us.
Thank you, Jean. Naomi, how about you?
I was off mute, and then I put myself on mute, and I just had to take myself off. Sorry about that. Oh, my gracious. These mute buttons. You know, what I get from it is that she's projecting herself onto the nature that's around her. She's feelings, her emotions are in sync with what's going on. When she says, "No weight of stillness could hold a memory, I'm all its vividness." So she is all of this, you know. She is she feels it, you know. I don't know how to explain it, but that's what the emotion I got from the poem is, that she's feeling all this so vividly and so emotionally, you know, strongly, all this darkness, this night, this nature, this, that she's projecting herself into it, or it's projecting itself through her, but the two are intertwined, herself and the nature around her, if I make sense there. But, you know, I really like this. This is so powerful. The imagery in here is just incredible. It's amazing. You know, the faint tree filtered glimmer of moonlight on the window glass, anger so intense it scrapes, never raw, reflections of cold, uncaring. Whoa. Is that the aliens?
Yes. Absolutely.
Reflections of cold, uncaring stars, blackest depth of the night. So, you know, yeah, I think, you know, it's either, you know, she's describing her emotions through the description of nature, or her emotions are influenced by the nature that is present. So, you know, one or the other. So that's what I got out of the poem. And,
right.
You know, I don't put aside, you know, Jean's theory there that the distant sun's there, everything could be a loss of hope too. That makes sense. That makes sense.
Thank you, Naomi. Northern, how about you?
I agree with the idea that it could be hope, because she talks about the blackest depths of the night and reflections of cold, uncaring stars, but yet they burn so hotly that you can't avoid but looking at them. The sun is always in the sky no matter where you go, and it either burns you or it leaves you in the cold. So I think that the allegory for it being hope is a fitting one. And, I like this little poem.
Thank you, Northern. I guess I'm going to go a little different. All right. This reminds me of Black Hole Sun by Chris Cornell, which is all about depression. Distant sun in a meaningless void. Again, that note, too, that there's disharmony right there. No weight of stillness could hold a memory on all its vividness. Something is really come to bear. Ragged black shapes, silvery promise, meet beyond the bowel of urban woods. It's distant. The faint trees still can glimmer moonlight on the window glass. Anger so intense it scrapes, never roars. It's there in the moment. Reflections, cold, uncaring stars, blackest depth of night. It hits me with the idea of depression in the moment.
Right. Makes sense.
Thank you, Teresa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm a little slow. Sometimes you got to give me a hint. Sometimes they got to give me a hint in the beginning, and then I catch on. You could see the darkness and that sun and whatever, and that to me was just the only thing I could figure is the sun was an element of hope. So, yeah, but it was a good piece in that respect, and you guys all hit it. So life is good.
Right. It could also be that angle of being in Alaska when you've got 24 hours of darkness.
Yeah, I don't think I'd like that very much. I think that's a little rough, man. A little rough.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's like a circadian pattern.
Yeah, right. Like I had one to start with, right? The girl is up all night every night. Okay. Tell you what, Naomi, I have one for you to read. And this is by Hope Soul. And it's called Cold.
Oh. Hey.
There you go.
Cold room, hanging in the 5 a.m. sky, the crystal moon trembles in the near dawn autumn light. It shimmies as it scurries to another corner of midnight gray matter mind, where I ask for more sleep, another cup of lavender primrose, and with a slice of apple. Oh, baby, I miss you. End poem.
Great read, Naomi. Thank you very much. Jean, this is right up your alley.
I think this is so sweet. I really do. And, you know, I love Hope's work, and I love the way she says things because she doesn't, like, buff them up with a whole lot of glitter or anything like that. She basically just puts it all in perspective in the real world, you know. Not that I drink lavender primrose with a slice of apple, but people do. You know, I'm sure she's not alone. But hanging in the 5 a.m. sky, the crystal moon trembles in the near dawn autumn light. You know, yeah, that's a beautiful image right there. You know, it shimmies and as it scurries to another corner of the midnight gray matter mind. You know, your mind does play tricks on you when you're half asleep, you know, and you dream. So I think that's a neat way to say that. Where I ask for more sleep, another cup of lavender primrose with a slice of apple. You know, it's like, yep, I have to get up anyway. Not that I want to, but I have to. And this will make it more palatable. But yeah, and when she says, oh, baby, I miss you, it all kind of clicks right there. And I think it takes you back up to the lines, and it really has such a wonderful way. It's just lovely. So thank you, Hope, for sharing with us tonight. Always like your stuff when you put it up on a Friday. Yes, double thumbs up. Great job. Yep, yep.
And Naomi, how about you? You got to read it?
You know, what an amazing writer she is. You know, they both are, Hope and
Nuno,
yeah. You know, and it's great. You know, their story is just, you know, like a Romeo and Juliet story, you know, that they met. I think they met online, didn't they, on AP? And, you know,
yeah.
And yeah, it's just so romantic. And the way that they keep writing back and forth poems to each other and, you know, sharing it with everybody. And it's, you know, her, and but coming back to this poem, you know, the imagery in here is just so amazing, and it leaves you with this emotion. You know, it's not just words on the sheet. It's an emotion that you can relate to, and you know, hanging in the 5 a.m. sky. You know, and your midnight gray matter mind, you know, that's tucking into a corner, scurrying around in your head there. And, you know, you're asking for more sleep. You know, you can all relate to that, you know, being up there at 5 a.m. And then, you know, and your thoughts go to your loved one, your lover, you know, your first thoughts. Oh, baby, I miss you. You know, it's 5 a.m. in the morning and you're already thinking of him. So, you know, it's so beautiful. You know, what a wonderful right.
All right, Naomi, thank you. And Norman, how about you?
Hello.
Did we lose Norman?
I still see her.
I'm here.
Oh, there you are.
Okay.
Hello.
Sorry.
That's
I thought it was a very sweet poem. I liked the last bit where she says she misses her baby. I thought that gave it a nice little oomph at the end. And, yeah, very short and sweet. And, yeah, I liked it a lot.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Norman. I look at this as a reflection poem because of what's offered up. Cold room, you hint at loneliness, hanging in the 5 a.m. sky, touch of insomnia, it shimmies and scurries to another corner of the midnight gray mat of mine, and you're thinking in the moment. And then that note of lavender primrose definitely hit on the idea of wanting something to calm the nerves, so to speak. And, oh, baby, I miss you, touch of sadness. So it rolls through a range of emotions, but reflects the moment very clearly. Nicely done, Hope.
Nice stuff. There's a lot of good ones. Okay, let me stop being all silly. Okay, Rex, I'm coming back to you. And this is a piece called "I Tried to Tell You I Was Unhappy" by Rooster Cogburn. So whenever you're ready.
Okay. "I Tried to Tell You I Was Unhappy" by Rooster Cogburn. Dear lover, by the time you open this letter, rest assured I'll be tacky bread, now dearly departed. Yep, gone, but hopefully not forgotten. Maybe you're glad to read last will and testimony, knowing I'm dead. I was craved adventure, a challenge, walk on the wilder side, when perchance both we met like passing ships at night, together plotting a course, unknown destination, adrift on the tide. So many memories, becalming waters or navigating perilous seas. And yes, I know, once or twice we nearly went down, capsized. But our love, ever resolute, rode out the storm until a gentle breeze. Nowadays, we're grounded, land lovers, each rotating within a wheel, round and round to earn a pound. My spirit's sapping, dying. Life is listing, and your indifference to existence, to our existence, lost your deal. So, my lady fair, it's au revoir. Guess I'm not that circle you can. I guess I'm not that circle you can square. After posting you this note on a flimsy raft, I'm setting off afloat, paddle into sunset, the great blue yonder, on a wing and a prayer. And should this lifeless, bloated body be washed upon some far land, bury me not in cold clay, rather weighed down, return to sea. And as it sinks, may someone speak, Godspeed, he went out as planned." End poem. And Northern, why don't we start with you, please?
Okay. I like how this is presented like a letter, Dear John letter, I guess in this case, the Dear Jane letter. I like how he's basically saying, screw this, I'm out of here. And, yeah, I like how each stanza is a little bit scathing, how he's digging into her about how she didn't understand that he wasn't happy, and now he's just going to leave and or die upon some lifeless foreign land. Yeah, it's very in your face. You can tell that the main character is very angry and wants to stick it to the other person, I guess. So, yeah.
Thank you, Norman. Naomi, how about you?
Yeah, well, I got the same thing out of it. You know, he's writing this letter. Well, you know, the prompt was write a poem for the contest, the honest eulogy to the Kate the Shrew. So he's writing to the shrew here, you know. You know, we all know the story of the shrew, I guess. Well, most of us probably do. And so, you know, this is a... You know, a very, yeah, like, very, well, I can't say maybe a comical little bit, you know, I don't know, it has something that made me, you know, I don't know, he's saying au revoir, also my lady fair, it's au revoir, guess I'm not the circle you can square. After posting you this note on a flimsy raft, I'm setting off afloat, paddle into the sunset, the great blue yonder on a wing and a prayer. So it's, you know, knowing Rooster, he's like half serious, half not all the time. Yeah, this is really, really awesomely well written all the way through. Godspeed, he went out as planned. And so, you know, he's like Northern Phoenix said it, you know, stick it. I'm leaving you. I'm going off. I'm not happy anymore. Farewell to you and you know, get on with your own life and I'm taking off. So, yeah, that's it. So, that's about it. That's what I got from it. So, bravo, Rooster. Good write.
Thank you, Naomi. Dean, how about you?
Yeah, I think this was a great take on the original idea of the prompt for the contest, the honest eulogy. I mean, you know, he said, I told you, I tried to tell you I was unhappy, you know, but the way he started this out, by the time you open this letter, rest assured, I'll be Tatty Bread. He has a note down there. Tatty Bread is dead. Now dearly departed, yep, gone, but hopefully not forgotten. Maybe you're glad to read Last Will and Testimony, knowing I'm dead. I always craved adventure, a challenge, walk on the wilder side, when perchance both we met, like passing ships at night, together plotting a course, unknown destination, adrift on the tide. So many memories, becalming waters and navigating perilous seas. And yes, I know, once or twice we nearly went down, capsized, but our love, ever resolute, rode out the storm until a gentle breeze. But then he turns it around. You know, it makes it a little, maybe, you know, less cheerful, nice, sweet. But I think it was a good job on the prompt. I really do. And intriguing contest by Kate the Shrew. Pretty neat. So wonderful job. And thanks Rooster for sharing with us tonight. I think you did a fine job with it.
Absolutely. I like that opening stanza, that note to Tappy Bread, a little bit of slang for dead. But and then that note to Last Will and Testimony, dearly departed. All notes to dead, but the sort of dead for him here is how who and what they were is dead, because he hits on that note. I always craved adventure, a challenge, a walk on the wild side, when perchance both we met like passing ships at night, together plotting a course, unknown destination, adrift on the tide. And then the memories, even they had storms, they still had each other, and they rode out the storms to calmer seas. But then you get that next one. Nowadays we're grounded, land lovers, each rotating within a wheel, round and round to earn a pound, my spirit sapping, dying. Life is listening with your indifference to our existence, lost your zeal. So kind of hits on that note of expecting the supreme change, yet he's still got the adventure angle within him. And even though he's hit on the idea, come on, we can do better than this. It's just not working. So the idea, hey, I'm off to Pharisees and following wind. So please have yourself a nice day. There is a bit of humor in this, Naomi, because it kind of hits the note of a scathing angle at parts without really being hard-edged. So I like it. Thank you, Rooster.
Absolutely. Okay. Okay, now the next one I'm going to put up is... There's Rooster. Okay. This is by Robert M. And it is called Uniquity's... Hang on. I've got to put it down. Uniquity's Folly. And I have an audio for this. So here we go.
This is my recital of Uniquity's Folly, a poem inspired by Chuck Palahniuk. I like to think of myself as different, unique. I am sure many people assume this about themselves. Yet, if everyone is unique, are we not all similar? There are those that would feast on our insecurities, preying on our differences as a form of subtle coercion. Seems our division is calculated and meticulous. The ones that stand to gain bet on those that fall for anything. So we are set up to let down, tripping people before and after the finish line. Rather than give others a hand, we give them the finger. Everyone wants to stand out. No one wants to step up. Institutionalized jealousy is inbred with manufactured outrage, and the hate child of society's worst aspects gets the most views. Judgment trumps jovial every time. Mockery has become the new pastime. Desperately, people try to fit in while simultaneously claiming individuality as a spirit animal. Too many chiefs humming potato to themselves. Amalgamation of failures peppered with minor achievements somehow leads to a sense of entitlement. I, too, have dusted the ledges of reason with feet of folly. Yet, I have come to realize that what I am is not mine alone. I have gotten this far with the help of others, even if hindrance was their intent. The benevolent have made me humble, and the malevolent have made me sharper and smarter. From the womb until my doom, I keep changing and evolving. Every hand that pats me on the back or robs food from my plate is a learning experience. So, no matter how rich or powerful you seem, no matter how much influence you have over others, just know that you are merely a byproduct of humanity and that you did not get there alone. We all hurt. We all bleed. We all thirst. We all hunger. Just as we all pay that final tax when death comes to collect.
Great read, Robert. Thank you to SoundCloud. Very much appreciated. Naomi, let's start with you.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he says it all in those last lines, eh? You know, so no matter how rich or powerful you seem, no matter how much influence you have over others, you just know that you are merely a byproduct of humanity and that you did not get there alone. We all hurt, we all bleed, we all thirst, we all hunger, just as we all pay that final tax when death comes to collect. So no matter how friggin' on the top you are in this world, you're gonna die anyway. And you know, you're just like everybody else. You know, death comes for us all, and then no matter who you are. So, you know, that's what I got out of it with my limited attention span there. You know, really well written and very powerful, very thought-provoking, right? And, you know, like Robert M. can do them, you know, wow. Just, you know, just is the writing just blows me away every time. And it's just so, so deep. And profound, this writing. So bravo, Robert. Right. Well done.
Thank you. Thank you, Naomi. Northern, how about you?
I always enjoy political poems. I'm quite fond of them. I like the lines, rather than give others a hand, we give them the finger. No one wants to stand out. No one wants to step up. Institutionalized jealousy is inbred with manufactured outrage, and the hate child of society's worst aspects gets the most views. It's a pretty scathing response to something like social media, I guess, which is definitely having a toll on our young people, and I definitely understand where the sentiment is coming from. And, I enjoy political-themed poems, so I like this one from top to bottom.
Nice. Thank you. Thank you, Norman. June, how about you?
You know, I thought this was just incredible. A very wonderfully penned piece. I love it here. This is where it starts. Well, I like the way this sounded into my ear. Judgment trumps jovial every time. Mockery has become the new pastime. Desperately, people try to fit in while simultaneously claiming individuality as a spirit animal. Too many chiefs humming potato to themselves. Amalgamation of failures peppered with minor achievements somehow leads to a sense of entitlement. I too have dusted the ledges of reason with feet of folly. Yes, I have come to realize that what I am is not mine alone. I have forgotten this far with the help of others, even if hindrance was their intent. The benevolent have made me humble, and the malevolent have made me sharper and smarter. I just love this piece. I think this is very different for Robert, and I really enjoyed it very much. So, great job.
Nice. Great. A lot of this hits on the idea of bluster and puffery and the ease in which it is to hide behind the fakery of who and what you are and what you offer up with the notion that you forget. You don't get to where you're going without some help along the way. And then the idea, the first few years of your life is all dependent on mother and father, nurturing, feeding, changing, and teaching you. And then you've got teachers on the other side walking through school and into college. And then you've got those life lessons. There's always something out there, whether you take it or not is irrelevant, but the idea is there are a host of people behind you along the way that have given something to you or taken something away from you. The idea is learning on both ends, and if you think you're doing it all by yourself, it doesn't work out that way, and they hit on that. We all pay that final tax when death comes to collect. That's the final notation of life, and whether it's well spent or well rotted, that's your choice. Nicely done, Robert. All right, Gene. We're back on you.
See now. My phone is just dinging away. Okay.
Oh, who's calling?
My daughter.
Well,
she took a trip this morning.
Playing,
Six thirty this morning. They left to go to Maine from Pennsylvania to pick up my niece from college. And they made the round trip. They went up, they had lunch, they picked her up, they brought her back. So they've been on the road, and she just got home when she called me. And now she's dinging my ear off. I'm like, I only got 15 minutes. Can you wait? You know, but that's the way it works. Okay, now Robert read the last one. Rex read the one before that. Okay, I'm going to I don't think that this has.
Yeah.
Okay. Northern, can I get you to read the next one for me?
Sure.
Thank you. Okay, let me put this up. There you go.
Oh, I love that guy. I love that show. Okay. Here we go. Rex's Blues. Got the poetry blues real bad. I need me some lovin'. Got some gals give me some sweet turtle dumbin', 'cause I've been down and I've been out for a while. I need me a honey to make me smile. Got three cool contests I have to judge. Guess someone soon will give me a nudge. I'm AWOL from the shows. They miss my dulcet tones. when I keep getting our moans and groans with, Rexy, where you at? What you up to, dude? You ain't playing nice, so I don't want to be rude. But being sick ain't no excuse for shirking. It's a line you said you should be working. One pen in one of your dandy doozies. Not daydreaming about flirty floozies. Dancing around your bed in a purple haze. Come on now, man. It's been too many days. Pam's missing a partner in crime, don't you know? She's awful lonely without you on the show. I read one that should have been yours, the real beau. But anyone can tell I ain't no substitute for Mr. Melty Chocolate and deep, woody voice. But what could she do? Our gal had no choice. So either Rexy Blues, y'all say, hey, give me a break, guys. I'm taking a day or two to get me back to my prime. This, I promise you, will have a rare old time. Get Rexy, Rex loves Selena.
Oh, great.
Oh, my goodness.
All right, dude. It's just you laughing. So I'll let you go first.
Oh, my. When was this? March 29th. Were you sick, Rex? Were you off? Oh, my gracious. This seems to be, you know. Yeah. This is really great. Oh, my gracious, the language he uses. And by the way, Northern Phoenix, that was an awesome read. Oh, my gracious, you did that so well. You even put in the little, it was like you were singing it along. It was just really neat the way you read it. And, you know, I just love it all the way through, you know. I had to laugh instead of lying in bed, you should be working on penning one of your dandy doozies, not daydreaming about flirty floozies dancing around your bed in a purple haze. Come on now, man. It's been too many days. I'm in the part about Pam missing her partner. Such a fun piece, you know. Thank you, Selena, for the laugh. Oh, my gracious. This is so, so funny. Thank you so much. So well done. Oh, boy.
Thank you, all right, Jean.
I thought this was a great piece by Selena. It really did. It was funny. But I feel bad because I didn't know there was an audio with it. It kind of went up at the end. Yeah, it went up at the last minute, and I was like, okay. I was like, thanks. And she didn't put a note saying there was an audio, so I never even looked. So I apologize, Selena. That would have been good, too. But you did a great job, Northern, reading it. So, yeah, it's – Oh, she did an impression of you too, Rex. Ooh, ooh, ooh. I might have to play it at the end if we have time, just for the fun of it. But just a fun piece and a lot of fun. I like how you started out in Rex's voice. God, the poetry blues real bad. I need me some loving. Some gal to give me some sweet turtle dubbing. The first stanza there, I mean, it's just like, okay, I can just imagine Rex, you know, saying that in his voice. And then the second stanza was, Rexy, where are you at? What you up to, dude? You know, so it took on a whole different direction with that. And I think you did a fine job and a lot of fun. Really, it was a great little piece. And I'm glad you were thinking about Rex when he was sick. I don't know.
Oh.
You know, it was just fun.
I love the picture.
Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, I've seen that face somewhere before.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Oh, this is a howl. I was laughing. I'm glad I didn't read. I didn't have to read this because I laughed through the whole thing.
Oh, yeah.
This was a howl. Damn. In March, and I missed it.
See,
well,
that's because you're sick.
I'll tell you what, though. It's funny as shit. Got the poetry blues real bad. I need me some loving. Some gal to give me some sweet turtle loving. Because I've been down and out for a while. I need me a honey to make me smile. Got three cool contests I have to judge. Guess someone soon will give me a nudge. I'm AWOL from the shows. They miss my dulcet tones. And all I keep getting are moans and groans. With. Like, yeah. Too funny. This is one of those roasters that gets you laughing. It's, oh my God.
Yeah.
I can't say nothing about this. It's all true.
Selena on the porch says, I sent it to you, dude.
There's a lot of stuff I don't get because I get so much crap on my phone. 20 pages in, and I'm still looking at stuff, but that was just yesterday. And, oh, my God.
Oh, trust me. Yeah. If I ever send Rex anything, I follow up with a phone call saying, Rex, I sent you something. Always. Otherwise, it's just it's lost. You know, nothing personal, Rex. I just know that you got a lot of things going on. So it does make me chuckle. But I'll tell you what, we have one poem left, and I think I'm going to have this one done. And I uploaded the audio for that. So maybe we'll go out listening to Stelina sing it. I'm not sure if she sang it, so don't get me wrong. But she did have a tune and such listed at the bottom of it. So maybe we will just do that. So here we go. This is Rex, I'm going to have you read this one. It's called Alzheimer's Disease by S. Sharp.
Okay.
Whenever you're ready.
Alzheimer's Disease by Scott Sharp. The wave of wind-blown snow cascades along weeded winter fields in time. Swirling wind peaks in winter's mind sweep down in vertical lines. Departing journey in trackless memories, straight cold walk, fenced and fashioned under gray temples, tempered skies. Stretching a pursuit of horizons beyond the winter's cold, frozen climb, thoughts accrue. In swales and gullies where like the waters of spring we all gather. Thoughts of summer long since past, icicles hung on time, and thoughts that mattered, the cold hard truth, a dog sled pulled, mushing onward. Like fingers numb in the arctic breath, brisk winds still blow through these veins in time, distant memories frozen. And poem. Woo-hoo. All right, Jean. Why'd you leave?
Because I was loading that poem. But
oh, okay.
You can come back.
Yeah, I'll come back. Naomi,
thank
how
you.
About you?
Uh-oh.
Naomi, you new taker?
She dropped, Rex. Sorry.
Oh, okay. Northern, how about you?
Okay. I liked how there's imagery of a frozen tundra and how the author has used this to relate it to Alzheimer's disease, because it is a very cold disease, and you are kind of left alone in the middle of a snow desert with nothing to hold on to. And so I do like the imagery is creepy because it gives me fear of what I might be in store in my future, because I have Alzheimer's in my family. I've watched people suffer and die from it. So, yeah, it's a depressing poem, but it's well written, and I like the imagery of snow and cold and ice and loneliness.
Excellent. Thank you, Nora. it does walk in that vein of, especially with the idea of winter, the snow angle where everything kind of fades into like the screen of your TV when it fuzzes out. You get everything goes behind a wall of snow, so to speak. Yeah, I like that analogy there, and it does fit the motif quite well, as well as the thoughts of cold being locked inside your own mind, so to speak, without being able to elicit your thoughts properly or coherently. That's a hard thing. I couldn't imagine it, and I wouldn't care for it one bit.
Mm-hmm.
So thank you, Scott. All right, Jean.
Yeah, I think this was a great piece by Scott. And I do like how he kind of paralleled Alzheimer's in winter. It's not something I would have thought of, but it was a clever take. Because, you know, in the winter, so much stops and slows down and goes dormant. And Alzheimer's is a sort of a dormancy. The thing is that there's no spring because it just gets slower and slower, and things change, you know, and it's a regression. And I think that It was a clever take on that. You know, the last one, like fingers numbed in the Arctic breath, brisk winds still blow through those veins in time. Distant memories were frozen. And I think this was just a really unique and well-penned piece by Scott. And really enjoyed it, hon. And thanks for sharing. Appreciate it. Absolutely. Now.
All right. Yeah.
That will bring me to Stellina Sound Club, just because I can. So let me copy that, and I'm going to put it up again, only because I'm crazy like. And didn't King Lear talk of winter and getting old? He may have northern, I don't know. It's very possible. So
the winter of our distant then.
Yeah. Here we go. Okay, this is by Stellina, so here goes.
Got the poetry blues real bad. I need me some lovin'. Some gal to give me some sweet turtle dovin'. 'Cause I've been dining out for a while. I needs me a honey to make me smile. Got three cool contests I have to judge. Guess someone soon will give me a nudge. I'm AWOL from the shows. They miss my dulcet tones. And all I keep getting are moans and groans with Rexy, where you at? What you up to, dude? You ain't playing nice. I don't wanna be rude, but being sick ain't no excuse for shirking. Instead of lying in bed, you should be working on penning one of your dandy deuces. Not daydreaming about flirty fluces, dancing round your bed in a purple haze. Come on now, man. It's been too many days. Pam's missing her partner in crime, don't you know? She's awful lonely without you on the show. I read one that should have been yours, a real beaut. But anyone can tell I ain't no substitute for Mr. Melted Chocolate and the deep woody voice. But what could she do? Her gal had no choice. So are these Rex's blues, you'll say? Hey, give me a break, guys. I'm taking a day or two to get me back to my prime. Then I promise you will have a rare old time.
Oh, a double dip. I like that. Doing funny on a second. I like that. Thank you, Shell. Oh, that was...
Oh, my gosh. And that brings us to the end. We got 90 seconds left. Pretty good.
Oh,
good timing on that.
Hey. All right. Great show, Gene.
Thanks,
you,
Rick.
Northern and Naomi for coming on board to help us read and comment. And with Stellina and Frank and Jessica on the boards. Thank you. You all are bloggers. So I guess we'll be doing this again next Friday. I think we've got two or three leftovers, rollovers.
No, I think that was everything except for mine.
Oh.
And mine was just in case we needed it. So we're good.
Back to back Fridays. We did the whole thing. Oh, that's unusual.
Oh, wait. I lied. There's two more that were put on the board after we started. I refreshed after Stellina put hers up. So we do have two. We have Darkened Auras and Jody Mountain. Sorry, Jody. I had no idea you had one up. Sorry, Darkened Auras. I never saw this last one. So, yes, we have two. You know, mine I can put up anytime. So we're good. And I want to thank everybody who called in. Thank you, Northern and Phoenix. And thank you so much, Naomi. And Rex, as always, thanks for co-hosting with me. I appreciate it very much. It's a great show. Lots of fun. See that? And you
absolutely.
Got Stellina read you a poem. See, you can't get sick around here. There's nothing sacred, man. Nothing.
Well, that did, that elicited a hell of a lot of laughs.
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah, so great show, everybody. Thanks for sharing your poetry, your voice, you know, your thoughts. We always appreciate it. And yes, now let's see. Tomorrow night is Gray. Oh, I already told you, Gray Eyes Smith and Dan DeShino, and they're doing front page picks with the help of Louie Wildo. And then we have Rhythm and Rhyme with Rex on Sunday. And then we're good till Monday when we do the Garden of Enlightenment again. Anyway, have a great night. And don't forget, I'm not sure if we're going to have a repeat show tonight on Part Center, Part Saint. So thanks, Rex. Have a great weekend, and I'll talk to you real soon.
All right. Good night, gang.
Night. Night, everybody.